The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
The unvaccinated will set this country on fire over and over again.
They're literally putting people's lives at risk. People are dying.
I mean, the virus is not killing us as fast as ignorance, right?
My right to refuse a vaccine ends when I begin to infect other people with a potentially fatal illness.
Only with documented proof of vaccination does one have the option to forego a face covering.
Vaccines, but with these vaccines, we can extinguish this virus once and for all.
But the time to act is now. Otherwise, you're going to see those numbers keep going up.
Because their teachers are going to be vaccinated.
If we can just get everybody vaccinated that's not vaccinated, that's refusing to get vaccinated, that's living vaccine-free and impacting the rest of us.
Proof of vaccination or a weekly negative test.
This is very much a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Say it is time to mandate all hospital employees be vaccinated across the country.
You know the zip code. You know where they live. Go knock on every door and talk them through it and get them a vaccine.
Every public school teacher needs to be vaccinated.
No more self-attestation. We want verification.
As a condition of your job, you have to get vaccinated.
With now the state mandate that we prove verification of vaccines. If you can't prove, then we're mandating testing.
With cases rising rapidly, particularly among the unvaccinated.
If you're a school teacher, if you're a nurse, if you're a cop, you need to get vaccinated. And if you don't, you need to look for another job.
Wow, there's, this is where we are. 17, 18 months in, 15 days to stop the spread, and everyone joined in, everyone participated, everyone locked down, and then the lockdowns continued for months and months and months, destroying businesses and livelihoods by the millions. And along comes the vaccine. I won't even get into the masking, not to mask. But along comes the vaccine, and now you've got to put this experimental drug, the most toxic substance ever injected into a human body. You've got to do this, or people are losing their jobs. It's already started. You just heard it there. Teachers, policemen. There's the story the other day of the manager and a pro football team. He's out. Didn't get the vaccine. Pretty amazing. Those are all clips, by the way, of commentators and leaders right here in the United States. It's worse in other countries. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show. As many of you know, it's broadcast live every day at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. That's 11 a.m. here in the central time zone of the United States, 12 p.m. or noontime out on the East Coast, and then 9 a.m. on the West Coast. We're also happy to have our broadcast partner carrying our live audio stream. That would be CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on the CRN platform. Of course, if you don't hear the live stream or view the live stream, you can get to all of the podcast of this program, again, at our website, thetrumpet.com, and just go to /live, and that'll take you not only to the live stream when it plays live, but also to the other podcasts from recent days. So Joe Biden, the fake president, he had an exchange yesterday with a reporter asking about whether or not these shots are going to be mandatory for those, I think it's in those working in veteran affairs. Here's how the fake president responded. And then you hear his handlers very quickly rush him out of the room, or rather rush the reporters out. This is clip 4.
Hey, President, Veterans Affairs is going to have a mandate.
You are such a pain in the neck, but I'm going to answer your question because we've known each other for so long. It has nothing to do with Iraq. The answer, no. I'll answer your question. Yes, Veterans Affairs is going to, in fact, require that all docs working in and facilities are going to have to be vaccinated.
Thank you, guys.
And then when it's not the leaders of the Israelite nations, well, then you've got the commentators, you've got the journalists there calling for more mandates. Here's an example from Australia. This journalist basically saying that, well, unless you get vaccinated, why should you even be able to go to the supermarket? The supermarket. This is clip five.
If the AstraZeneca take-up doesn't improve, when do you get to the point when you actually go hardcore and say, if you don't have the AstraZeneca and you do qualify, you can't go to a supermarket or you can't go to this particular place?
You know, I think it's always a balance in a kind and democratic society as to what you do in...
We're locked in our homes at the moment.
...as a one-in-100-year pandemic, and that's part of the balance.
There's a journalist taking an even more extreme position than some leaders in Australia, and they've got plenty down there that take extreme positions. We've seen that. You've heard the clips on this program. Listen to this commentary. I think this comes from Sky News Australia, and they're commenting on some of the extreme measures that the leadership in France have taken of late. This is clip six.
In France, they're now saying, Macron is saying, oh, you can only go to hospital if you've been vaccinated. That means hospital for anything, not just COVID. What do you make of that?
Well, that is just a complete violation of the Hippocratic oath. And I think that any doctor that obeyed that sort of mandate would be an absolute violation of their own ethics.
Absolutely.
As a doctor. It doesn't matter when somebody comes into the ER on a gurney, if they are some horrible person, a neo-Nazi skinhead, they're, you know, whatever, a child molester, any sort of evil person, they still get treatment. That is the point of our medical system. And that has been the way it has been for centuries. And to start to violate that, you know, we saw this before. Remember, what we're seeing right now is an attempt by the health bureaucrats and the health mob to basically take over society.
Stop
there
it,
have
yes.
been forays down this road for a long time, Rowan, but now the coronavirus gives them an excuse. And, you know, I want to see the back of this pandemic as much as anybody else, but I do worry that there are some people in some of these health bureaucracies that are enjoying this and their ability to remake society in their own image
no question of
a
that.
Little
no,
too
no.
much.
He's exactly right there. They're enjoying this. They're enjoying this, remaking of society in their own image. COVID-19 gives them the perfect opportunity to just issue all of these mandates. Going back to the very beginning with the lockdown, with the masking, now the vaccine together with the mask and more lockdowns too, all of it together. They're enjoying this, these communist rulers. They love this. You can hear it. You can hear it in the press conference with people like Governor Cuomo that just goes on and on and on. He loves to hear himself talk. You heard it, some of it anyway, in the opening montage. I have a few others here. I don't know if I'll have time to get to them all, but listen to this montage of from Dr. Fauci. This is him over the past 14, 15 months, just literally flip-flopping from one position to the other with respect to wearing masks. And just I'd like for you to look at how he presents this information, even though he continually contradicts himself. But here again, he's enjoying this. He is enjoying this. This is clip seven.
People should not be walking around with masks. Let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better.
And masks are protective.
But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
There has not been any indication that putting a mask on and wearing a mask for a considerable period of time has any deleterious effects.
There are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course.
You do not need to wear a mask indoors if, in fact, you've been vaccinated. But good that you're vaccinated, but in a situation where you have people indoors, particularly crowded, you should wear a mask.
So even if you are vaccinated, you should wear a mask.
That if, in fact, you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, you are protected, and you do not need to wear a mask outdoors or indoors.
When the children go out into the community, you want them to continue to wear masks.
You know, if you look at children outside, particularly when they're with the family, walking down the street, playing a game or what have you, don't have to wear a mask.
The Academy of Pediatric actually makes that recommendation that children should be wearing masks from 2 years old onward.
And you're asking now, if your child is a member of your household, can you walk outdoors with your child without a mask? According to that chart, the answer is yes.
But the child can't, not to beat it to death. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Because okay. Now the CDC says, I mean, I think I've got this right. One mask is better than zero masks. Two masks is better than one mask. But you don't have to have double masks. Is that right? I mean,
you know, it became clear that cloth coverings that you didn't have to buy in a store, that you could make yourself, were adequate.
And then you want it to fit better. So one of the ways you could do it, if you would like to, is put a cloth mask over, which actually here and here and here, where you could get leakage in, is much better contained.
And are you a double masker, Dr. Fauci? Look like you are.
That's the most influential scientist in the United States. He's an expert. He's also the most powerful. There have been quite a few reports of late of those that wouldn't challenge him last year on the Wuhan lab theory because they feared losing funding from some of the agencies that man controls. He's just bouncing he's all over the map. And yet still, the most interviewed, the highest paid government employee, the most influential, the most powerful, controlling all of these billions of dollars going all over the world, including to the Wuhan lab, that Institute of Virology. And he's just back and forth and back and forth. There was an article in the Washington Post recently by Joe Rogan who basically, he was talking about the confrontation between Fauci and Senator Paul. And he said that, you know, technically when you look at the narrow definition that these scientists use for gain of function, it allows for Fauci to sort of dance around it. As Senator Paul said when he called him out on that, he basically said, you're lying. Do you want to retract your statement? But they word everything so carefully so that they can say, well, according to this precise definition, you know, this really wasn't happening. No one wants to challenge him because they risk losing a lot of money if they do. What a system. What a system. And it takes me back right to the healing booklet and comments Herbert Armstrong made back in the 1960s about just how powerful this medical bureaucracy is. Fauci himself, he's been in government for 4 or 5 decades. We've gone through some of that history before. But on this Wuhan lab that he now knows or has been exposed as where the virus started. This is the Wall Street Journal editorial board. It says the WIV, that's the Wuhan Institute of Virology, has handled coronaviruses. U.S. experts visited the lab in 2017 and 18 and warned about a dangerous mix of subpar safety standards and infectious bat coronaviruses. It says in January, the State Department published a fact sheet warning that several WIV researchers had been sick with COVID-like symptoms in the fall of 2019. It also noted that the group had been conducting gain-of-function research that could possibly enable viruses to infect a new species, all while collaborating with the People's Liberation Army. I mean, that's the CCP, the Communist Party. It says, and the WIV's critical virus databases were taken offline, ostensibly for security purposes. And Fauci wants to dance around the fact that he was providing funding for these communists. And he can say, well, it wasn't for this specifically. But then you step away from it and you think that's in Wuhan, China, connected to the communist Chinese army. How does he even know how the money's being used? He doesn't. He doesn't, yet he still gets up. He flip-flops on masking. He flip-flops right in front of Congress. He lies to Congress. And yet maintains that he is science, that he is the truth. One last quote from the Journal article. It says, Democrats and much of the media will avoid the topic because Rand Paul and the populist right have taken up this cause. Such groupthink is what prevented the lab leak theory from being treated seriously for more than a year. And, of course, the Journal's now saying, are we going to make this same mistake again? Are there still people, a lot of people, in this vast medical bureaucracy that will not step up and challenge this doctor, this expert, who's been proven to be wrong, who's been proven to be a liar? A lot of them still, they fear speaking out. Here's what another analyst had to say on Fauci. And why he's so defensive, or why he should be. It says, moreover, Fauci himself should welcome the probe, for if conducted properly, it could lift this cloud over his head once and for all. I mean, he should be out front saying, look, well, if it came out of that lab in Wuhan, I would welcome an investigation. We need it. We need to get to the bottom of this. But he's not even saying that. He's just out there maintaining that whatever he says, whatever position he takes, even if it's always changing, it must be right. It must be the truth. It's just like Governor Cuomo, the same spirit. Where is that clip? The one where he's going on and on about how all he's done is tell the truth. This is clip 3.
And I am telling you, as I sit here, I have told you the facts on COVID from day one, whether they were easy, whether they were hard, I told you the truth. While a lot of people were talking politics, and a lot of people were talking theory, and a lot of people were trying to deny because they didn't want to deliver bad news, I told you the truth. You know why? Because I believe in you.
He covered up the truth. And now the DOJ is saying no need to investigate the nursing home scandal. We're just going to move on. So he's feeling pretty good about himself. And he's there yesterday just going on and on and on about how that all that he ever did was tell the truth. And really, I mean, if there's anything scandalous, it was the Trump people. Because he was going on and on and on about China, China, China. Well, China's where it started. The lab is where it started. And you know who was on to that earlier than anyone else? That would be Donald Trump. Mike Pompeo, we've played the clips for you before. There's another story here in the news stack about Sweden. Remember how Sweden approached the pandemic last year? They didn't lock anything down. They didn't lock down like so many other Western states did. This is from the Foundation of Economic Education. It says Sweden, of course, was maligned in 2020 for foregoing a strict lockdown. The Guardian called its approach a catastrophe in the making, while CBS News said Sweden had become an example of how not to handle COVID-19. I mean, they're so sure. They're just, I tell the truth. CBS is appalled. The Guardian, what is Sweden thinking? By some of the commentary, you would think Sweden would have nuked itself by now. Everybody dead of COVID. It says here, despite these criticisms, Sweden's approach to the pandemic continues today. In contrast to its European neighbors, Sweden is welcoming tourists. If you want to go and take a trip in Europe, go to Sweden. That's what they're saying. Sweden's welcoming tourists. Businesses and schools are open and with almost no restrictions. And as far as masks are concerned, not only is there no mandate in place, Swedish health officials are not even recommending them. You're at a point now where there's more freedoms there in Sweden than there are in Britain or in some of these blue states in the U.S. Or certainly more so than in Australia, Canada. It says, what are the results of Sweden's much-derided policy? Data show that the seven-day rolling average for COVID deaths yesterday was zero, as in nada. and it's been at zero for about a week now. This is the rolling average in Sweden. No one's dying. Of course, that's another truth that was covered up early on. The fact that the mortality rate with respect to COVID-19, it was at about the same level as a bad flu season, maybe just a tiny bit higher. So a bad flu. Alan Jones, the Australian commentator on Sky News, he pointed out, well, he went back to just a few years ago when they had a really bad flu season and a lot of people dying, and the Australian authorities then, nothing. They did nothing. And then you contrast that with today. This is clip one.
Where does this end? Are we saying that no cases is the end? No deaths? Why the hysteria now, when in 2017, 1,255 people died in this country from influenza? In South Australia, 34 people in one day. Not an eyelid was blinked. During the Spanish flu, Australians went about their business, as we did during the war, but not now over a virus. Well, we've had 84,000 tests in the last 24 hours and 172 cases, 0.20%. I'm merely saying we need decency and proportion in the response. The New South Wales government stands condemned. It has provided neither.
It's provided neither decency nor proportion. Not even that many people getting sick. And yet all of these lockdowns, all of these calls for mandates. Back to this article on Sweden. It says Sweden's overall mortality rate in 2020 was lower than most of Europe, and its economy suffered far less. Meanwhile, today, Sweden is freer and healthier than virtually any other country in Europe. It's all about the science, right? Well, it just depends on what science you're referring to. If it's the politicized science coming from the radical left, coming from the communists that are running a lot of these nations and states, well, you know what their narrative is. You heard it at the cold open at the top. All of these people, they didn't tell you about the side effects of the vaccine. They just said, if you don't take the vaccine, you need to go find another job. You need to be fired. You shouldn't be able to go to supermarkets. That's where we are in our descent into madness. When we come back, we'll talk more about true and false narratives with respect to January 6th and also November 3rd. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can write to the program through email, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Breathing out, breathing in, more precious than it's ever been. We can't take it for granted. Never in our lifetimes has that fact been clearer, that precious breath of life. It might start to shorten. It might struggle. It might cease. How can it be protected? How can it be prolonged? How can it be saved? And what is the purpose anyway? What is the purpose of human life? What should you use that breath for? Most of us turn to doctors. It's a reflex, but it's becoming more and more clear that the medical industry does not have all the answers. It can be amazingly helpful, but can it actually heal? Is this the place to turn for healing after all? The human body, human breath, human life was designed, powered, preserved. It was created. Who made it? With something so important as your life, you need to know the creator of life. The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong will show you from your Bible the answers to the questions even most Christians are afraid to ask. Is the day of miracles past? Does the living God heal sickness? Did God raise up medical science for our day? What is the role of doctors? You can have not only sound health, but a sound mind. Go to thetrumpet.com and search The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong. The Trumpet Daily.
There's an article at American Greatness that just makes an excellent point about the January 6th, the so-called insurrection on January the 6th. The point that it makes is that if this was, in fact, a plot to take over America's government, if this was sedition, if this was an insurrection, then why not award Ashley Babbitt's killer with some kind of Medal of Honor? I mean, if these people protected the United States of America from a government overthrow, well, there should be medals being handed out all over the place. As it is, Ashley Babbitt's killer, his identity is still being concealed. Well, he should be heading up a parade through the streets of America. If he saved the United States from a government overthrow, Angelo Codavilla says, because the government had such a hand, big and unpalatable to Americans, in the events of January 6th, it is now impossible for the U.S. government to detail factually who the enemy was on January 6th without indicting itself. You know about all of the FBI informants and agents that were part of the plot, as many as 15 at least. 15 who were there. 15, like this guy. This made the rounds on social media. He's there egging on the crowd. Yeah, we've got to storm the Capitol. And listen to the way the Trump supporters around him respond during one point in this montage, clip 8.
Tomorrow, we need to go into the Capitol. Into the Capitol.
What?
No! Peacefully. Fed. Fed.
So you see there, they're calling him out. The crowd says, what? We need to go into the Capitol. That's where the problem is. That guy's name there, he's Ray Epps. He hasn't been languishing in solitary confinement for 6 months. He hasn't been arrested. And there's all of this video evidence out there just like that, where he's saying, we need to storm the Capitol. And then you see him next to Sullivan. I forget his first name, but that's the Antifa guy hired by CNN to get video footage of the so-called insurrection. Codavilla says this, the so-called Proud Boys, often cited as a far-right organization and said to be somehow responsible for January 6th, was led by one Enrique Tarriero, an FBI informant, the leader of the Proud Boys. He's an FBI informant. Says the so-called Oath Keepers, the group most cited and said by government sources to be most involved in that day's events, is led by one Stuart Rhodes, another FBI asset. In fact, the Justice Department lists some 15 participants in the event against whom it brings no charges, either for insurrection or even for trespassing, because these individuals are paid infiltrators. They're paid infiltrators. Now, one of the points that this article, or it might be another article I have on the kidnapping plot on Governor Whitmer in Michigan. I guess I'll come to that in just a second. But you can see how, you can see why. There are people on the right who would like to know what happened on January 6th. You've got Pelosi and all the others on the radical left saying, we need a commission. We need a January 6th commission. And then when the Republicans say, all right, well, we'll go ahead and put Jim Jordan, our Republican, on that commission that you want. And Pelosi's response, no, we're not taking Jim Jordan. We don't want him. We only want Republicans who hate Donald Trump. And so they go out and they get the useful idiots. They put them on the commission. It's all by design. They don't want to get to the bottom of January 6th. Keep in mind the truth about the Mueller investigation. That was not to investigate something or to investigate crimes. That was the intent behind that, as we've pointed out before at thetrumpet.com, was to cover up the truth. It was to cover up the crimes of the radical left. All of the spying, all of the setups, setting up Mike Flynn and the like. And then here are all of these, it's the same kinds of situations. And along comes the January 6th Commission, and they're not coming along because they want to release all of these thousands of hours of footage in and around the Capitol to show you what actually happened. They want to keep that covered up. And what they show you is carefully selected. It's carefully edited so that it looks more violent than it is. And then you see this footage of guys like Mr. Epps there saying, we need to storm the Capitol. And he doesn't get arrested. That's because he's working for the FBI. That's because the FBI was behind it. The FBI was trying to incite it so that they could use it as a pretext to go after Trump supporters. And they've been doing that for sure. More than 500 arrested. All the examples of those people sitting in jail being tortured in Washington, D.C. because they made the mistake of being near the Capitol. In some cases, just being near the Capitol. A few others went in for 10 minutes and then came out. It says here, they work for the FBI or other U.S. intelligence agencies. The U.S. government refuses to expose what these persons did because they did it on the government's behalf. I mean, this is happening in the United States of America. That's what's so stunning and shocking about it all. You would think, okay, KGB, Soviet Russia back in the day, this would have just been so common, this kind of thing. Now it's happening right here in America. It says here, that's because the alleged intent to overthrow the government, if there was such, came from the FBI's own infiltrators, who are the only witnesses, the only source of testimony about the supposed intent of the trespassers. That's why the government tries to drag out investigations, quote unquote, to intimidate the press, to agree to some form of self-incrimination, and does all it can to prevent the events of January 6th from coming into the public adversarial judicial proceedings as prescribed by the Constitution and laws. They don't want this to drag out in court. They just want to intimidate you into confessing of some crime, even if trespassing, because they don't want they certainly don't want to get down to actual evidence. Oh, you're with the Proud Boys, are you? Yeah. Well, yes, I am. And did you know that the leader of my movement is an FBI agent? Do you know he was the one that was inciting our group? They don't want that to go to court. They don't want that to be before a judge. So they use these intimidation tactics. This other piece regarding the Gretchen Whitmer plot. I mean, it's now known that that was organized primarily by FBI informants. The FBI, you know, the FBI, if it does one thing really well, they thwart their own plots very well. Isn't that great? They design it, they set it up, they're behind the plot, and then they come in and blow it up and say, look at what we did, look at what we stopped, look at what we prevented. And then we now know that there were all these agents, what, five or six FBI agents? Right in the middle of the plot, the article, this one's from American Greatness, it basically explains how difficult it is to carry out acts of terror here at home, here in the United States, because you've got to know influential people, you've got to know how to make bombs or weapons or whatever. And most people, most ordinary Americans, even if they have some extreme views and they say extreme things on social media, a lot of them don't know how to do that. They don't know how to carry out a plot, or if they do, they get caught. So along comes the FBI informant, who actually knows how to do some of these things, and says, hey, I can help you do that. What do you want to do? You want to make a bomb? Are you going to blow up a DC building? This is how the FBI is operating. Now that it's been completely and thoroughly weaponized by these communist leaders. This article, American Greatness, it says the people the FBI sends in to look at the chats or communicate with the suspects aren't just a fly on the wall. They're not just trying to get in there so that they can observe this radical movement. They offer help. They offer the radicals, the extremists, help. They're trying to help them commit crimes. It says they offer bombs. They offer direction. They suggest targets. They tell the suspects They need money for the cause. They ask them when they can fly to Syria or Iraq or wherever. It says in case after case, it's the FBI that creates the illusion of the ability to do harm. There are no bombs, no ability to launch an attack. There is no group ready to meet and support them. No weapons smugglers or expert marksmen. There is only the anger of a lonely person screaming into the void of the internet. And the only one who answers that screaming is the FBI. Frightening stuff, again, coming out of the deep state, the swamp. One last news item here about November 3rd, the election steal, the election fraud. This is from Western Journal. It says here, as the dust settles in the wake of the disputed November 3rd presidential election, an increasing number of Americans are skeptical of its outcome, with more voters now favoring forensic audits to affirm the authenticity of the stated results. This is, as I say, it's from the Western Journal. It says a majority of likely U.S. voters, 55%, support forensic audits to ensure there was no voter fraud, according to a new Rasmussen Reports poll. 29% oppose such audits. So that's a pretty strong majority who support it as opposed to those who don't. Says the poll, which surveyed 900 likely voters, was conducted in June and has a margin for error of so on. According to the report, a whopping 41% of likely voters do not believe Democrat Joe Biden won the presidential election fairly. 41% say it was rigged. He cheated. He didn't win. It says here, this is a significant increase since February, when just 34% said they believe fraud affected the outcome of the race. So here again is why you see the effort of the radical left, the communists in government, why that their strategy, their goal here is to just blot out all discussion of it. Don't even talk about it. You can't even bring it up. It's just like with the vaccines. If you talk about the side effects of the vaccines, that gets erased. It doesn't fit into that narrative you heard at the top of the show. But the fact is, there are people talking about the election steal, Donald Trump being chief among them. He's off at the campaign in Phoenix on Saturday night. I played clips for you yesterday on that. And then, of course, the building momentum of these state audits in Arizona and in other states. So it's hard as the propaganda media is trying to blot this out, all discussion of the election steal. It is being discussed. It is out there in the open. Not nearly enough people are covering it in the major media. But still, I mean, I think what's most revealing about these polls is when you compare the number today, the percentage today that are convinced it was stolen, 41%, and compare that to what it was back in February, 34%. It's trending in the wrong direction. As far as the radicals are concerned, the last thing that they want is to be exposed. So they don't want to see any kind of audits. They don't want to see any kind of doctor come forward and say, you know what, that vaccine is dangerous. It's an experimental drug. It's the most toxic drug we've ever injected into a human body. They don't want that out there. They want to blot all of that out and just sit there and tell you, well, of course the Veterans Affairs doctors are going to have to get the jab. Of course, if you're working as a public servant, if you're a teacher, if you're a policeman, of course you've got to get the jab. If not, you've got to get another job. This is a demonic movement. This is like you heard from that doctor yesterday, Peter McCullough. I mean, we are headed in a dangerous direction, a time of, as he predicted, 3 to 5 years of turmoil. And it starts right with the turmoil in our minds. Mental derangement. What is behind this? What is motivating this? Well, that would be the God of this world. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. That would be the prince of the power of the air. Ephesians 2:2. That would be the devil who deceives the whole world. When we come back, we'll continue with our study from yesterday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in broadcasting. We've got to keep moving here. This quote I gave to you yesterday, I left you with this right at the end of the program where my father talks about or he comments on Samuel, the prophet, in 1 Samuel 3 there, where he says, or God says about him, he didn't let one word of God drop to the ground. He caught everything. And then my father made the point that we in God's church, we've got to keep improving. We've got to keep growing. He said this, God is going to set the world upon our shoulders. We will need every word, every little bit of education God gives us. And then my father said, I know that in my life, I really need every bit of education God has given me and still need a lot more. See, we still need to keep growing. What an example of someone who's later in life and yet he's continuing to drive himself to be more and more educated. Think of Herbert Armstrong, another perfect example. He said he learned more and accomplished more in the last 10 years of his life than he had in all the years previous. He lived to 93, wrote Mystery of the Ages there in the last year of his life. Just an incredible, a marvelous example. I want to take you to another example. Yesterday I gave you all those verses in 1 Samuel 1, 2, and 3 about how that God was working with this child. The child Samuel grew on, it says. He grew on in favor with God and with men. He grew in wisdom and in stature, even as a child, even as a teenager. He gathered up all the fragments, every little bit of truth that he could. He didn't want to let one bit drop to the ground. Look at another example here in Judges 13, I should say. This takes you back to the period of Judges, so it's now before Samuel. And as you know, this period, for 450 years, a dreadful period in Israel's history where there was just so much darkness, the truth had virtually disappeared, and there were just a few rare exceptions. In that four-century period of individuals who obeyed God, it says here in Judges 13:1, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Eternal, and the Eternal delivered them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years, it says, a dreadful period of captivity, lawlessness, slavery. Verse 2, it says, and there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and bare not. And the angel of the Eternal appeared unto the woman and said unto her, behold now, you are barren and bear not, but you shall conceive and bear a son. So this was exciting news for yet another barren woman, like Hannah, she had to wait for a child. I'm not sure how many years, but like my father says in the God Family Vision, over the time that Hannah waited, she really did get the God Family Vision. She really came to a deep understanding of why children. We got into that subject yesterday. Continuing in verse 4, it says, "Now therefore, beware, I pray you, and drink not wine nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing, for lo, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." God started working with this child from the womb. And these parents knew they had a special child on their hands. So that no doubt gave them a lot of motivation to bring that child up in the nurture and the admonition of the eternal, Ephesians 6:4, to teach that child, to discipline that child, to educate that child. And then as he drew closer to those all-important preparatory years, his teen years, his early 20s, he had to do his part as well. But notice this verse in particular, verse 24, just further down in the chapter, it says, "And the woman bare a son and called his name Samson." Samson's name, by the way, means ray of sunshine. And this was a hopeful message that God sent to Israel through this incredible man, Samson. He had some weaknesses, as we well know. But it says about young Samson that the child grew and that the eternal blessed him. As I was saying yesterday, when you see verses like this, it's not just talking about physical growth and development. It's talking about mental growth and spiritual growth. It's talking about becoming morally upright and strong in the Lord. The child, it says, grew. And God blessed him. Verse 25 says, "And the Spirit of God began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol." The Spirit of God began to move this child, this young man. As I was saying on yesterday's program, are you one who makes excuses for obeying God, for following God, for pouring your heart into God's work? Some have said, "Well, I'm too young," or maybe "I'm too old." Moses said, "Well, I don't speak well." It's easy to make excuses. Look at the parables in the New Testament. All those invites that went out to the marriage, and people that said, "You know what? I just bought some land. I've got to go care about this, or I've got to go take care of this." And Jesus having to go, or his servants having to go to the highways and byways just to find people who were interested in God's way of life, in God's purpose. It's such a magnificent and awesome calling. And yet it is the devil's world. And the devil has convinced a lot of God's people that it's not really that great. It's not really that awesome. It's not really worth fighting for. It's easier to just surrender, to just give in. Notice 1 Samuel 16. 1 Samuel 16, Brad McDonald gave a lecture recently about King David and just how much vision he had as a young man. He was motivated by Israel's history and by the prophecies of God. And he carried that vision with him out into the battlefield, even when fighting Goliath. And you can see it in his exchange with Goliath. You know, "Who are you to defy the armies of the living God?" This is God's army here, after all. This is not a human army. This is not an army like maybe you've encountered in any other battle. This is God's army. You're fighting God. What motivated that kind of courage in a young man of perhaps, 15, 16 years of age? Well, it says here in 1 Samuel 16, this is where David is anointed as king. "Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of God came upon David from that day forward. So here's a young man in his teens who received the Spirit of God, who received the power of God. That Spirit is the Spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. You can see that in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 6 and 7. Staying here in 1 Samuel 16, it says, "And Saul," verse 17, "and Saul said unto his servants, provide me now a man that can play well, and bring him to me." So this really is an incredible sequence of events. David, as many of you know, he had to wait 17 years after he was anointed before he actually became king. 17 years. And you know why God made him wait that long? Because David needed to grow on. He needed to grow in his relationship with God, in favor with God, and in favor with man. He needed to develop courage and strength. He needed to learn how to fight for God. He needed to continue developing his talents, his aptitudes, his special abilities. Well, Saul was being harassed by demons, and he was experiencing some mental derangement. And so he wanted someone that could play the harp and that could soothe his mind. It says here, "Then answered one of the servants and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is cunning in playing, a mighty and valiant man, a man of war and prudent in matters, and a comely person, and the Eternal is with him." The Eternal is with him. God is with this young man. So David was made to wait for 17 years between the anointing and the actual kingship. But during that time, I mean, this is like a little one-verse biography here. Look at how productive he was with his youthful years, developing into a fine poet and musician, a man of war, a mighty and valiant man. It says there, prudent, a comely person, God, above all, as it says at the end of that verse, God is with him. David was growing, in other words. Notice verse 21, it says, "And David came to Saul and stood before him and loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer." So thus begins this beautiful relationship, which says so much about David's character. Here he's there assisting this man who was suffering from mental derangement. And it says David loved him greatly. He loved the office of king. He loved that throne of, well, it would be called the throne of David later. Saul had all of these weaknesses. David was serving a man with some pretty significant weak points of character, and yet the Bible says he loved him greatly. There's other verses. We're running out of time, but in 1 Samuel 18, it speaks of David behaving himself wisely, and Saul, it says, set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people. They really admired and respected David, this young man. This is before, obviously, Saul then went on a rampage and tried to kill David. And then David's out in the wild. He's on the run. He's living in caves. But it says here, this is 1 Samuel 18, 14. It says, "And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Eternal was with him." That's what we need in our pursuit of true education. We need God right at the middle. We need God to be with us. And if he is, then we can grow on like David, like Samuel, like Samson. That's true education. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to write the program, email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.